ride. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We're going to play a round of Know Your Onion a little bit later on, too. And we're mostly going to talk about the Beatles this morning. The fact is that tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. And so that's a big deal. And we're going to talk about that and some other Beatle topics throughout the morning as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. But welcoming to the studio is an author, a Beatles expert, the host of Something About the Beatles podcast, Robert Rodriguez. He's been on the show several times. And we love to welcome him back. Robert, how are you been?
Been great, Nick. Great to be back.
Yeah, good to see you. So tell everybody about, what was the last book you wrote about the Beatles?
Last book I wrote was Solo in the 70s. That was sort of my sequel companion volume to Fab Four FAQ 2.0, covering 70 to 80. And I couldn't get it all in one book, so I expanded it into two volumes.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're Something About the Beatles podcast.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
It's going great. I mean, it's been unbelievably busy. You can imagine this year, a lot of 50th anniversaries,
yeah.
Starting with Let It Be at the beginning of the year, the Let It Be sessions and the rooftop and all that. And now we're kind of winding down the Beatles' career 50th anniversaries, but there's still going to be more to talk about. So.
Sure, of course. There always is.
Always.
Tell
always.
Me about, remind everybody about your personal experience being a Beatles fan. How did it all start for you?
It just started as being sort of a latter-day Beatle fan. The Beatles were split up and gone by the time my fandom started, and it was due to the Red and Blue album compilations, which there was nothing less cool than being a Beatle fan at the time I became one, because
right.
Everybody was into Zeppelin and Rush and Kiss and all
yeah.
that stuff. So that was kind of my nature anyway, is not to be what the popular kids were doing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But, you know, you can't go wrong with the greatest band in the world. And even
yeah.
now, I mean, you look at this year, besides the 50th of everything, you had the Yesterday film.
Yeah.
You had the Tarantino film with the peripheral Beatle tie-in with Manson, such
mm-hmm.
as it is. And that's been the kind of stuff that's been keeping me busy all year. You know,
yeah.
just all these anniversaries and talking to people that were there, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
How often do you hear, when you talk to Beatles fans, how often do you hear that their introduction to the Beatles was the Red and Blue albums? I mean,
they have to be of a certain age.
Yeah, I
and
guess
now
so,
it's
yeah.
It's turning into Beatles 1 with
oh,
their...
Oh, right, the number
yeah.
one hits, right. Oh, man, that makes me feel old.
Right.
That makes me feel old. I've told you this before, it's really strange. The Beatle album that was in our... We didn't have a lot of Beatles albums
mm-hmm.
in the house for some reason, but the Beatle album that I kind of grew up on as a kid... that I listened to mostly, it's a strange one, was the Hey Jude album, the compilation record.
Isn't that interesting? Because,
yeah.
again, it's one of these things, I've talked to plenty of people that was their gateway.
Yeah.
And that was maybe my third Beatle album after the Red and the Blue.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing because back when I became a fan, and maybe it was your case too, there wasn't a whole lot of Beatle literature out there.
No, yeah, yeah.
And so you see this picture that's on the cover. I didn't know at the time, but it's literally from the last group photo session.
Yeah.
August 22nd, 1969.
Yeah.
And the album opens with Can't Buy Me Love.
I know. It's so weird.
It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
There's something weird here.
Yeah. It's a strange, I mean, obviously it's great because there's a ton of great songs on it.
Yeah.
But it just, because it, you know, covers so much time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a weird compilation record, but that's the one that was my gateway.
A great gateway to have because it's a crash course, you know, from 64 through 69. It skips the psychedelia and the two, you know, weird stuff. It's all pretty much up-tempo rock.
Right.
And so if you're like new to the Beatles, there's not a single track in there to, you know, be weird or jarring. It's all
yeah.
readily accessible stuff.
There's no Revolution Number 9.
No. But Hey Jude, man. I mean, that's the popular Beatles song of
yeah,
all time.
Yeah. Did you happen to see Paul McCartney the other night on Colbert?
I did.
I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely great. And Colbert clearly, I've said this before, I think Colbert is one of the best talk show hosts.
I agree.
On TV. And when, you know, he's a great interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate, always great. But when he reveres someone, when he really, really likes someone, it's real special. And he dedicated the whole show to him. He just did his monologue. That was it. And then it was all Paul McCartney. I thought it was great.
I thought it was great, too. There's people I saw quibbling about it. Oh, you know, Paul's telling the same story he's been telling for years. They're new to somebody. It's not meant for the hardcores. And honestly, you know, speaking of Colbert as an interviewer, you can tell when he's really affected by something that he kind of loses himself.
Yeah.
And when he spoke of Band on the Run and
yes.
his association with the death of his father and brother,
yeah.
that's a really revealing personal thing that he's sharing with Paul McCartney.
Right.
I don't think he tells that story gratuitously. So.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, it's a true story, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I love the fact that, You know, because the Wings don't get the respect that they deserve. I love Wings. Yeah. I think they're great, and I think those albums are great.
Million selling band. It's a string of number one singles.
Absolutely. And I know they get. I don't know what it is. Why do Wings get trashed by so many people?
It's a very good question. And I just did a 2-part interview on my show about that. I had a woman on who's a PhD student who studied rock criticism of the 70s, and a lot of it comes down to. They couldn't figure out, they were sort of coming to terms with the definitions of pop and rock when Beatles were around and Wings were around. It's like, well, what are they? Yeah. Should we like this? Is it dangerous enough? Is it subversive enough? Because that was the whole mystique of the rock critic as the rock icon going on at that time.
Yeah, Lester Bangs and everybody.
Yes,
yeah,
bingo.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And so Paul wasn't quite cool enough in what he was doing. But damn, he's selling tons of records. And then there was a Lester Bangs article in Cream where he's attending a Wings concert and try as he is to be too cool for this, he can't help but get sucked into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. I think Venus and Mars and Band on the Run are two of the best albums that anybody from the Beatles is associated with.
Solid, start to finish.
Great stuff. And mm-hmm. And I love the fact that that personal story that Colbert told was about a Wings song and not a Beatles song. For some reason I'm a year younger than Colbert.
Okay.
And so like I vividly remember when Bands on the Run came out and was on the radio. I remember that time period, you know, vividly. And you know, and if you're a kid, and he was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. he was young when his brother and his father died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is an impactful thing. When you're like 9, 10 years old, like I was like 9 or 10 when Bands on the Run came out. When Bands on the Run, that's a VH1 reality show from a few years ago. Band on the Run came out. And that I was really, you know, if something emotional had happened to me at that time period, I definitely would have latched onto that song.
Music absolutely attaches itself to emotional events in your life.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, I remember reading this for older people who were around when the Beatles were an active band, that a lot of them had this association with Christmas because the Beatles tended to put out albums at Christmas time. And so their first hearing of the White Album or Rubber Soul or whatever would have been from Under the Christmas Tree.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter what time of year they hear a certain Beatles song, they'll flash back to Christmas.
Yeah.
And so it's got that power.
Our newsman, Vic Vaughn, who works with us on the show on the overnights.
Beatle guy.
He is no, he's not a Beatle guy.
He's not?
No.
Somebody is.
Vic is a he had no musical knowledge whatsoever before this year.
Oh, really?
And it's absolutely true. And he would be the first to admit it. I'm not talking out of school. He admits that he had absolutely no music knowledge whatsoever, and he got tired of it. So he decided that he was going to educate himself. And so he's going through this thing for the past few months where he's been listening to every album. That it's on the Rolling Stone top 100 albums of all time list, mm-hmm. and then researching them and learning about the artists and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He was tired of not knowing what music, you know, like we would make music references, and he's like, I have no idea what you're talking
about. That's amazing.
So he's in the middle of that. So he's been listening to a lot of Beatles, because there's a lot of Beatles entries on there.
And it's building toward number
and
one.
It's building toward number one, yes. Mm-hmm. And so we discussed Abbey Road with him mm-hmm. when he listened to it. He loved it. And where does Abbey Road rank as far as like best Beatles records? I know a lot of people who think it's the best.
Oh yeah, that's definitely it's up there, because it's really hard to dislike, especially if you're not a super critical fan. You just want a nice listening experience from start to finish. There's so many songs on there that have had heavy radio rotation, Come Together, Something, Here Comes the Sun, and other things that became more popular later. Like when the Beatles' Love came out and you started hearing Because with just the vocals,
right.
You know, things like that. It is a ton of ear candy, mm-hmm. and it's not in any way to diminish it. It just is. It's them at the peak of their craftsmanship.
Yeah, yeah. And I love it. I mean, I love that record. Mm-hmm. I love all the Beatles albums. But my favorite, and we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. I love Rubber Soul and Revolver. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorites.
Did I ask if it was American or the British Rubber Soul?
It's probably the British Rubber Soul.
Okay.
Yeah.
Drive My Car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I like those. But to me, and we've talked about this, mm-hmm. Those are transition records.
Mm-hmm.
From they were one band before those records, and then they were a different band after those records.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that journey. I like those two albums.
It's a lot more interesting. It's experimental. They're just feeling their way, not knowing how this trip is going to end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's my, you know, I don't want to bash Pepper. Everybody loves Pepper. It's a cultural touchstone.
Yes.
It's bigger than the sum of its songs.
I agree.
For sure.
I agree.
But to me, it's a lot more the work of craftsmanship who knew what they were doing versus Revolver, which is a total experiment from start to finish.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's more interesting.
Yeah. I you know, when I was a kid, when I first heard Revolver, I was like, whoa, you know, and stuff like Tomorrow Never Knows. I was like, man, oh, man. But yeah, well, listen, we're going to take a break, Robert. And your podcast, everybody can find it at like iTunes and all the places where you can get podcasts.
Yeah, it's coming back to iTunes. It was off because we had to change servers because I did a show at Ramsey Lewis and it crashed the server.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Too many people at once.
I was going to say, you proud of that a little bit?
A little bit.
Yeah,
not the word proud enough.
I would be. Yeah. Something About the Beatles is the podcast. Do you have a website that people can go to?
Somethingaboutthebeatles.com.
There you go. Somethingaboutthebeatles.com. That's easy enough. Okay. Robert, hang out for a second, okay? Robert Rodriguez is here. He's an award-winning author, and he's a Beatle expert, and we're talking Beatles on the eve of the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. Okay, we'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back more with Robert after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We're going to have a round of Know Your Onion a little bit later on. That's when Tom is your host, and he will read you a series of news headlines. And you have to guess whether they're real or they're from the satirical newspaper, The Onion, because the real news is just really crazy right now. So it's difficult to know. But you'll win some prizes. We are on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road. That is tomorrow. So we're talking Beatles stuff all morning long, celebrating that and much more. We're also going to talk about some of the best Beatles covers by bands that cover Beatles songs. And but right now we got Robert Rodriguez is here. He's a Beatle expert. He's an author. He's the host of the podcast Something About the Beatles, and we wanted to have Robert in on this, the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you on, usually you come in right before Beatle, but I keep calling it Beatle Fest.
We all do.
I know. Fest for Beatles fans.
There you go.
But we missed you this year. I'm sorry about that, but no problem. We're glad to have you on now. You've
Absolutely.
Been keeping busy anyway.
Oh my God, yeah.
How did Fest for Beatle Fans go?
It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always good to reconnect with fans and with friends that are in the business, friends of mine who've been on my podcast that write books and things like that.
Yeah.
And every year it gets more and more expansive. So it's one of those things that it's like a little vacation weekend, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's always, I went for several years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't gone in a while, but it was an annual tradition. My friends and I would get a couple of hotel rooms and we would stay all weekend and just have a blast.
Geek out.
Yeah, exactly. 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. I know you know all these anniversaries that are happening are keeping you very busy, but you're actually going to Rochester today.
Yes, yeah. The Eastman School. Yeah, they're doing a 50th anniversary of Abbey Road symposium this weekend, so a lot of Beatles scholars and people like that are going to be just basically every nuanced angle of Abbey Road and the Beatles generally.
Right.
Yeah, so it's cool. I like immersing myself in this,
yeah.
I have to tell you.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about side two of Abbey Road.
Yes.
I absolutely love it. It's my favorite song on the album.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about how that came to be, about how side two came to be. I mean, it's a Paul thing.
It was Paul working with George Martin. No, this is the thing. There's so much stuff that the interviews they gave after they split that were particularly negative and nasty, just John Lennon in particular just wanting, you know, just lay waste anything to do with the Beatles because he's promoting himself then. And he talked about that directly, about how that was more Paul's baby. And I like rock and roll, man. I don't like that, you know, tone poems or whatever you call them.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is, I dug up for the thing that I'm writing, that I'm delivering at Rochester, an interview in the spring of 69, months before Abbey Road comes out. We're talking to New Musical Express. And he's very excited talking about me and Paul are working on this collection of songs, this collage we're putting together.
Yeah, yeah.
He was invested in it like everybody was.
Yeah.
And it was songs that they thought had some value, but not enough to really labor over finishing them. Some of them went back to when they were in India with the Maharishi,
right,
demoing these songs like Me, Mr. Mustard and stuff like that. And, you know, John had kind of moved on by then and what he wanted to sing about, but they both recognized, you know, we could do something with these songs and sort of string them together and create something bigger than the whole of its parts.
Yeah.
That would be a little bit of an advance because the Beatles always wanted to do something different from their peers. And that was the approach they took. And now that they had George Martin back on board, because he wasn't so much during Let It Be or the White Album, you know, he lives for stuff like that. So it's like, absolutely, let's go. And you may know that originally Her Majesty, which ended up as the hidden track, it was originally incorporated into the medley. And it was alternating John song, Paul song, John song, Paul song. And originally it came between Mean Mr. Mustard and Polythene Pam. But when you hear that, and you'll hear it as part of the package now, the original edit of that, it brings things to a crash. It just doesn't fit.
It doesn't. It wouldn't fit.
No.
No. Not
at all. Just doesn't make any musical sense. So they spliced it out, and Paul was all set to throw it away. It's just him and his acoustic. It's not anything produced or anything. But John Kurlander was the engineer who had been under strict instructions from EMI. If the Beatles put something on tape, never throw it away. And so, not knowing what to do, he spliced it to the very end of the master tape of Abbey Road, separated by 26 seconds of silence.
Right.
And then when they heard it by accident, by letting the reel play through, and that crash, it's like, this is cool.
Yeah.
They didn't know what a hidden track was yet, but they just invented it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Some people might be confused if they don't know. Abbey Road was actually the last album that they recorded together, even though Let It Be came out after.
That's correct.
So I just wanted to make sure, because you said, White Album, Let It Be, and then they were working on Abbey Road. And some people might be a little confused. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Let It Be, what became the Let It Be album and film, was put together right off the heels of the White Album, like separated by 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
But they're both 1969. And Let It Be project started out, pretty rough. They didn't really have an idea what they wanted to do, and they're all in different directions, and George quit during the making of it, got talked back. But by the end of it, and the day before they finished the project, is when they did the rooftop thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so on fire, like, this is great. This felt so good. It felt so right. They rolled basically into the Abbey Road sessions. Most people don't know that, but in February, they started with I Want You, She's So Heavy and Something. So really, Abbey Road was put together over the course of several months, stopping and starting, not just the summer.
Yeah. But it's and obviously, how did it, all these albums sold well. When Abbey Road came out, what was the response?
Well, the response publicly was, oh good, the Beatles are still working together, because this was coming during the year of a lot of John and Yoko external activity in the Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah.
And of course, privately, we know that there was, a lot of turmoil going on over business things and other issues.
Right.
But when it came out, like within a fortnight of that, the whole Paul is Dead thing started. And that's, you want to talk about something going viral before there was such a thing.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. And, Capitol Records in the States, they weren't ones like, you know what? The record's flying off the shelves because people are wanting to interpret clues. So, they weren't going to quash it right away.
Right.
A reporter from Life magazine went up to Scotland, tracked Paul down, confirmed he was alive, and it kind of petered out after that. But I this is the thing that amazes me, because I just cut a show on this. It'll be coming up, that there are people to this day full of YouTube channels and videos and blogs that swear, No, it's Paul. It's fake Paul, and it has been for 50 years.
And is it Billy Shears? Is that the
or William Campbell?
William Campbell.
Take your pick.
William Campbell, because Billy's here is what they say the lyrics are. For people who might not know the Paul is Dead thing, people started to interpret these clues on songs and on the album covers and inside the albums that were clues to the fact that Paul died and he was replaced.
Yes.
Like one of them was, since we're talking about Abbey Road, he's barefoot on the cover of Abbey Road and they bury you with no shoes.
Yes.
And so people, that was one of the interpretations.
If there's anybody listening to this that doesn't know about the Paul is Dead thing, it blows your mind that something like this could get such traction out of nothing.
It was huge.
It was very huge.
Yeah.
And that album cover, where they're all dressed distinctly different. John is either an angel because he's all in white, or he's the preacher.
Right.
Ringo is the undertaker. He's in a dark suit. Paul is the corpse, barefoot. His eyes are closed. Look, Paul McCartney was left-handed, but he's holding the smoke in his right hand.
Right.
It's a fake.
Yeah.
And George is dressed head to toe in denim. He's the gravedigger.
Right.
And there's the Beetle in the background parked in front of the studio. 28IF is the license plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, oh my God.
And there are clues like on the back of Pepper, Without You is coming out of the side of his head.
Yeah.
And
his back is turned.
His back is turned, right. And, in the White Album, there are the pictures on the inside in the booklet.
Yeah.
What's the Paul is like under, it's like he looks like he's underwater or he's dead.
Yeah,
he looks like his corpse. Yeah.
Yeah,
in the poster. Yeah, on the poster that you put.
Right. Like it looks like a drowned corpse or something.
Right.
Although the story was he died in a car accident. And there's car accident references in Beatles songs.
Right.
He blew his mind out in a car.
Right.
You were in a car crash and you lost your hair.
Right.
It's like,
And of course, I buried Paul.
I buried Paul.
Which is cranberry sauce.
Right.
Which is what they actually say is cranberry sauce.
Strawberry Fields, yep.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that when I first started to hear about that. I thought, I think it's hilarious. And I'm sure that, has Paul McCartney ever been really asked about it, what he thinks of the...
Chris Farley.
Oh, Chris Farley did write this.
Remember that? That wasn't true, right?
That's right. The incredible interview stylings of Chris Farley.
Yes.
That's great. So the you know, Paul was on Stephen Colbert the other night, and I just thought the interview was great. I really did. And he didn't, but he didn't bring up the Paul is dead thing. I thought at some point he would bring it up, because knowing Colbert, you know,
yeah,
that kind of direction for the interview would be something he would have fun with.
That's rich material there.
Yeah.
Especially when you have an whole hour to work with.
Yeah, I remember one year there was a gentleman, you probably know him. Mm-hmm. We were at Beetlefest. I still call it Beetlefest, sorry, but we were at Beetlefest, and a gentleman wrote an entire book about the Paul is Dead.
The Walrus was Paul.
Yeah, The Walrus was Paul. Yeah. And I went to, I saw him speak, and I bought his book, and what's his name?
I forget right
You forget?
Now.
Yeah, yeah, but he, but yeah.
Yeah, he's passed away since.
Oh, he has?
Yeah, for real.
Okay. Oh, for real? That's not a hoax. Right. That's not a hoax. But anyway, it's really fun. It's kind of fun to look at all these ridiculous clues and see. And it is nuts that, I mean, nowadays, these kind of things just, you know, there's a million of them.
Right.
Because you have the internet and you have all this, you know, social media and stuff. A rumor or some sort of weird thing about somebody dying can take place 2 seconds and it goes around the world.
You just go on Facebook for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And things pop up all the time.
Yeah.
And people have been dead for years would suddenly, like, newly dead be posted.
Yeah, I know. They post that. They post, like, obituaries for people who died, like, 8 years ago or 8 or 9 years ago. I see it on the internet. I'm like, wait a minute. That person died already.
Poor Gilligan.
Yeah. But to put it in perspective, that kind of happened throughout that whole time period with the Paul is Dead thing. It's just crazy.
There were magazines published about it. Like I said, Life magazine went and tracked them down.
Right.
F. Lee Bailey, the lawyer, did a TV special about it. Christopher Glenn from CBS was enumerating the clues.
Yeah.
It, just for it to get that kind of serious attention. This wasn't fringe stuff. This was moving into the mainstream.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy stuff. All right, Robert, hang on, okay? Robert Rodriguez is here. He is an author and a Beatles expert. Been on the show several times, and he is the host of Something About the Beatles, and that's a podcast that you can get now. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, talk more Beatles with Robert after this on 720 WGN.
Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver hammer came down upon her head. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver hammer made sure that she was dead.
Love this song. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. It's Beatles morning, man. We are a day away from the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road, so we're going to celebrate with the Beatles. We got a Know Your Onion coming up, too. Robert Rodriguez is here. And this is really sad, but and I love that song.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. But the first thing that pops into my head is Steve Martin every time I hear
it. Oh, my God.
And I know that that's horrible because the movie is just a train wreck, the Sgt. Pepper movie.
It's a kitsch classic.
With Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees and George Burns. Mm-hmm. But I always, the two songs that stay with me, oddly, were on Abbey Road, and the other one is Aerosmith's version of Come Together, which is great. Their version of Come Together is great. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the best cover versions of Beatles songs. Do you have a couple you want to throw in before we get into that?
Ray Charles doing Eleanor Rigby, and Stevie Wonder doing We Could Work It Out.
That's way near the top of the list.
And Colbert said that too.
Colbert said it was the best. Yeah, Colbert said that for because they talked about covers. We're going to play a piece of that, but we're going to talk about covers and open up the phone lines to everybody. I really like Got to Get You Into My Life by Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah.
I really love that.
I didn't know this till I had him on the show, but Maurice White had been Ramsey Lewis's drummer.
What?
Yeah. In the Ramsey Lewis Trio, the second iteration of it, they're from Chicago.
Yeah.
And he'd been the drummer, and he described on my show when Maurice told him he's going to quit the form his own thing out in L.A. with singing and dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ramsey's like, yeah, go ahead, Maurice. We'll see. What do you know?
Exactly. Abbey Road turns 50 tomorrow. And you were telling me a little bit off the air, I want to talk about it on the air, but they just discovered a tape.
Okay, there was... In the time between finishing Abbey Road and before Abbey Road is released, there was a meeting convened at Apple between John, Paul, and George. Ringo was in the hospital, so the tape recorded the meeting so that he would be privy to what was discussed. And it was them sitting around the table discussing their future. Now, it's been hyped as a newly discovered tape, and maybe the audio itself is newly discovered because now I guess, pieces of it are getting heard out in the public, which wasn't the case before.
Right.
But the tape itself has been discussed in John Lennon's lifetime. There were two books that quoted from it, Beatles Forever being one of them by Nicholas Schaffner, the other one being Anthony Fawcett's John Lennon One Day at a Time. And what's interesting about it is, you know, going circling back to Maxwell, that gets discussed at this meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
How they agree that it's daft to record a song and put it on a Beatle record that none of them like, including the guy who wrote it. And why can't they just give it to Mary Hopkin or something like somebody like that?
Who was on Apple.
Yeah, who was on Apple. And I interviewed her daughter this year, and she didn't know that story.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my God, mom doing that song.
what other artists were on Apple?
James Taylor. His debut, yeah. A guy from Liverpool named Jackie Lomax, who they put everything into. They had Clapton on his record, and the Wrecking Crew from L.A., and Paul and George and Ringo playing on it. Couldn't get arrested. And I think it was mostly because Apple did not know how to market people. They could spot talent.
Yeah.
And maybe it would find its way on its own, but they sure as hell didn't know, put these people on as opening act on some big act that's out on the road.
Yeah.
Get them on TV. And it didn't happen.
Well,
so
Badfinger broke through.
They did break through despite everything, and then it ended up being a tragic story because they got screwed by their manager. Yeah. But their talent was undeniable.
Oh, yeah. No, they were great. Badfinger they were great.
Yeah.
How closely did they work with the Beatles? Badfinger?
Okay. They were signed as the Ivies, and it was a slightly different iteration. Three of the same guys and a guy named Ron Griffiths on bass, and that was the group that recorded Come and Get It that Paul wrote, Paul produced. And the reason was that the Ivies had put out a record and Apple hadn't been behind it, and it kind of stiffed, and they were complaining to the music press, we're on the Beatles label, but it doesn't mean much when we can't get a break.
Yeah.
And so Paul's like, you know what, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'm supposed to write music for Ringo's movie, The Magic Christian. Here's a song I wrote. You guys record it. You have the hit with it, and you'll be on your way. And that's exactly what happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Joey joins the group. They record No Matter What, which Apple sits on for half a year thinking it's not commercial.
Oh.
It comes out, becomes a smash. And that's the same album that has Without You on it.
Yeah.
So that was the big money spinner for Apple Publishing.
Yeah.
Nilsson, Mariah Carey, you name it. Just total evergreen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing talent.
Absolutely. How did the Beatles officially announce their breakup?
They never officially announced it, giving a statement like, we're going our separate ways. But what happened was, John had, just days after that meeting that was taped, you know, here he is at the meeting saying, I think for our next album, me and you, Paul, and George should each get three or four songs each. Ringo can have two if he wants, but we're going to split it up equally this way. And Paul, who, of course, is masterfully prolific, he has everything to lose, he says, no. You know, that kind of regimented thinking is better for the military, not the Beatles. And so people were like, when this news came out of the tape, they're like, oh, see, Paul broke up the Beatles. He didn't want to record another album after Abbey Road. You're taking it out of context.
Yeah.
Anyway, John goes off a week later to play in Toronto with Clapton and Alan White and Klaus Voormann. So he's feeling pretty good about, wow, that felt good. I can make music outside the Beatles. Comes back, says he wants a divorce. And then the Paul's Dead thing starts out. Abbey Road comes out. So behind the scenes, the public's not really knowing what's going on.
Right.
Come 1970, he puts out Instant Karma. Let It Be is finally coming out. Meanwhile, Paul's been working on his first solo album. So when he puts it out, he's like, you know what? I've been keeping my mouth shut to this point about John giving his resignation. I'm putting out my album. And he puts out this interview that he himself wrote all the questions to and then answered. And there's questions in there like, do you foresee a time when the Beatles get together to record again? No. Do you foresee a time of writing songs with John again? No. Was there a moment when you made this record you kind of wish Ringo was here? No. And he's not saying he's quitting the Beatles. He's saying time will tell. That's what he's saying. Very open-ended.
Yeah.
What's the headline in the paper? Paul quits the Beatles. That was how the word got out when John heard that he was fuming. And a guy I just had on the show was a journalist friend, Ray Connolly, who I told months before they'd quit the group. He goes, I told you that back when. Why didn't you publish it? And Ray's like, you told me not to, John. And he's like, you're the journalist, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he felt that Paul had stolen a march on him to sell his record.
Oh, I got it.
Meanwhile, Paul's like, I didn't say I quit.
Yeah.
Because immediately he got all the scorn and hatred that John would have got if he was out there as a the guy who broke up the Beatles.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting how that went down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the solo careers. You've written books about
them. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
The solo careers. Who do you think had the most interesting solo work?
Well, George was the one. He was the master craftsman artist hiding in plain sight, getting his one song per side of a Beatle record.
Sure.
All of a sudden, the same year, everybody's despondent because the Beatles have split and they're fighting, and it's just like an ugly divorce. That end, year's end, he comes out with a triple record debut album. A worldwide smash with My Sweet Lord and then What Is Life is the next single. And it's like all these great, great Beatle-worthy songs. So right out of the box, he's like the top Beatle. And that was like a revelation to people. People knew Paul was talented and John was talented.
Yeah.
It took John the longest to have a number one hit single.
Mm-hmm.
Not till 1974, if you can believe that, with Whatever Gets You the Night. And he had Elton's help for that.
Yeah, that was his only, well, not his only, but that was
his
first
number. Well, the next one was posthumous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was,
oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay. So only while he was alive, that's the only number one single he had.
It was the only number one single, yeah, because even people think Imagine was, that only made it to number three.
Okay.
It was blocked by the theme from Shaft and Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But Ringo had two number ones before John had one.
Photograph, was that one?
That was one.
And She's Six, or You're 16?
You're 16.
Yeah. And they were both from the same record.
Correct.
Yeah, which is a great album.
It is.
And he's got an all-star, well, no pun intended, but he does have, like, unbelievable musicians on that record.
Opening track is a John Lennon composition with Ringo, John, and George on it.
Yeah.
And Billy Preston and Klaus.
Yeah.
It was the closest thing to a Beatle reunion. Three Beatles on one song. That was amazing. And so that helped sell the record for sure. It's like, you know, Paul's on the other side, he's on Year 16, and the song he wrote for Ringo. So it was perfect timing and perfect storm for Ringo.
Yeah, I've often said, I've said this before, that every I think it's, is it every song named Photograph is good?
Oh, Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, and then no, because Nickelback has a song called Photograph.
Oh, so there you go.
That throws that theory out of the.
Every Do It Again is a good song.
Yeah, Do It Again. I also say that Since You're Gone.
Okay.
Since You've Been Gone. Ever Since You've Been Gone or Since You're Gone. All of those are
okay.
All good. That's what I go with.
There's certain ones that just work, no matter what the setting.
So what's going to happen for the Let It Be anniversary? Is anything planned for that?
Oh, yes. You're familiar with Peter Jackson, being a movie buff, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Do you know that he was given all the extant footage from the Let It Be project, which is like 30 hours of film, 90 hours of audio, of everything that was going on that was documented? You know, the film itself, Let It Be film, is like 89 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer, except for the rooftop last 20 minutes.
Right.
And a lot of people complain that it's not really telling the true story of what happened there, which was not nearly as dismal as it comes off in the film.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you don't want to overcorrect and make it one big holiday camp, but there was a lot more. If you think about it, you know, they talked about themselves as, oh, that was the most miserable thing on earth. Only because it seems like their memories were shaped by watching the film.
Yeah.
And they didn't, if they'd listened to the audio, listened to how much fun they had, especially after Billy Preston joined, this is the thing. They went in there basically empty-handed, walked away with almost every song on Abbey Road debuted.
Yeah.
All but five. The Let It Be album, three number one hit singles, Get Back, Let It Be, Long and Winding Road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's miserable, I mean, think of the productivity. That's unbelievable.
So Peter Jackson's putting something together?
He's putting together, yes, in whatever form. Next year, next spring, will be the 50th of the Let It Be album and film. And so they're going to try to time it to that.
Oh, man.
But that's going to be unbelievable.
That's going to be amazing. That's going to be so huge.
And see, you know, I've been talking about Let It Be stuff on my show forever. I've had different experts on who've listened to all the tapes and stuff. We know that it's not as miserable as a lot of the public thinks it is, because the Beatles said it was.
Right.
So I think when Peter Jackson comes out next year, that's going to get all the attention, and they'll be catching up to where we've been for a while now.
Gotcha. All right. Robert, always a pleasure to have you on, man. Your knowledge of the Beatles just astonishes me every time we talk.
Always great to talk Beatles with you, man.
And you can go to somethingaboutthebeatles.com. There's a podcast. He's written several books. Beatle expert, and he's going to be busy for the rest of the year.
I am.
Happy anniversary for Abbey Road.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, you see you later. That's Robert Rodriguez, everybody. We're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up, and then we're going to continue talking Beatles on this, the eve of Abbey Road's 50th anniversary. All right, so we'll take a break here on 720 WGN.